Alfred Delp, a 20th century German priest executed by the Nazis for his participation in the resistance movement, wrote from prison words that have stayed with me for years. He said that Advent is a message that shakes us up so that we will know who we are and to whom we belong. He continued that there is perhaps nothing we modern people need more than to be genuinely shaken up. Where life is firm, we need to sense its firmness. And where it is unstable and uncertain and has no basis, no foundation, we need to know this too and endure it. I came to a deep appreciation of this Advent message 2 years ago when I was diagnosed with early stage dementia. When I heard the doctor say, "Tracy, you have dementia. It's probably frontotemporal degeneration," I was shaken to my very core. My life had suddenly become really unstable, and my future was so very uncertain. And I entered into what I like to call the wilderness of dementia, disability, and discernment. I had to acknowledge the reality of my condition. I had to step down from my work, and I and my beloved Emily had to discern what was going to become of us. I felt like John the Baptist had walked into that doctor's office and just ripped apart the fabric of our life and confronted the essence of my very identity. When he said to me, "Tracy, if your disease continues its normal course, eventually you won't be able to talk or read or write." And I thought, how can this be? Communication and language has been at the heart of who I am. For years, I've preached that if Jesus was the carpenter, then his cousin John was a demolition contractor. If Jesus is the bearer of a new day, then John is the wake-up call. And this morning, I'm here to tell you that Jesus is the way to new life, and his forerunner, John, is the great interrupter of our old lives. John the Baptist knew that the Lord was coming. How or when or where, he didn't know. He just knew that he and anyone that he could reach, had to get ready for the great restoration of humanity, for the repair of the breach, for the salvation of our God. And according to John, the first step in readiness and in preparation for God's reign on earth was baptism. Full body of baptism. Full body immersion in the muddy River Jordan. John's baptism was a complete cleansing of body, mind, and spirit. Like having your mother scrub your skin raw after you've spent an evening of playing hide-and-go-seek and poison ivy. Or back in my day, not in yours, having your dad wash your mouth out with soap after you said something bad. Today, that would be considered child abuse. John's baptism is like a cold shower or an assaulting alarm clock. It's what happens when you really encounter poverty for the first time and you realize just how much stuff you have. It's how you feel when you finally get in touch with your own racism, or classism, sexism, homophobia, anti-Semitism, or xenophobia. That's what happens when you got it all together. And someone else, a child, a parent, a friend, a neighbor in trouble, turns your life upside down. I'm here to tell you, John's baptism is hearing the doctor tell you that you have an incurable and untreatable disease, and it's probably time to step down from your job and get your affairs in order. John's baptism of awakening often leads us to frightening places where we realize that we are not immortal, invisible, or God-only wise. Instead, we come to an understanding that we are very mortal and that our lives are fragile and often foolish. Repentance is the turnaround that follows that crash. It's the rebuilding that follows the demolition. It's the construction that follows the destruction. Repentance is literally a change of course. It's taking a new tack. It's a matter of being grasped up by God, picked up and put down in a new place so that everything looks and feels different. A little like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. Singer-songwriter Carol Etzler wrote, "Sometimes I wish my eyes had never been opened, but now that I've seen with my eyes, I can't close them." And repentance is like that. It's about seeing your life or somebody else's life with new eyes so that you have to let go of the old patterns, behaviors, attitudes, and perspectives, and you have to begin to create and claim new ones. As I said in the forum, after several months of sequencing through those Kubler-Ross stages of denial, grief, anger, bargaining, and acceptance, I heard the voice of God say, "Tracy, it's time to transform this interruption from a death sentence to a pilgrimage, from an intrusion in your life to an invitation to something new." And in that moment, I decided that with God's help, I would live out what I'd been preaching for over 30 years. Out of pain comes joy. Out of brokenness comes wholeness. And out of death comes new life. Emily and I now find ourselves dwelling in C.S. Lewis's metaphor of the living house. Actually, it's an appropriate metaphor for this cathedral because every time I've been here, you've been under construction. In his seminal work, Mere Christianity, Lewis writes, "Imagine yourselves as a living house. And God comes in to rebuild that house. And at first, you can understand what God is doing. God's getting the drains right, stopping the leaks in the roof, and so on. So you're not surprised. But presently, God starts knocking about the house in a way that hurts and doesn't seem to make sense. And you wonder, what on earth is God up to? And the explanation, Lewis says, is that God is building quite a different house from the one you thought of. Throwing out a wing here, putting on an extra floor there, running up towers and making courtyards. You thought that you were going to be made into a decent little cottage. But God is building a palace, a cathedral, in which God intends to come and live." So what are Emily and I doing? Well, we're trying to construct a new life. A new life with dementia that is rich and full all the way to the end. And that includes remodeling an old house in a quiet neighborhood where we intend to live out this next chapter of our life. Now, our plan was to simply create a first floor master bedroom and bath and a front porch for me to watch the world go by. But you know how it goes. You take a 1925 house, one of those old center hall colonials, and now our architects and contractors are knocking it about in ways that we had not imagined. As that old Yiddish proverb says, we make plans and God laughs. That's how it is with repentance. We offer up our lives to God and with all of its brokenness and all of its mess. And God responds, probably with a smile on her face, "I forgive you and I love you. And now get on. Get on with making amends and living anew. The remarkable thing about repentance, you know, is that we get to do it over and over again. Because life is full of those turning points, both large and small. And if we miss a turn, or if we start to backtrack, the opportunity for repentance will present itself again. And that's why I think we say the confession every week. Because God realizes, or at least the authors of the Book of Common Prayer realize, that we never quite get it right. So when the demolition is complete and the dust settles, when the storm has passed and the waters recede, when the illness is over and you start to feel like you might live again, when the old pattern is really gone and you're looking at a blank palette, then and only then can the reconstruction begin in earnest. Then and only then can new life and new patterns appear. But it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. So what are we to do as we wait in what Auden called the time being? Well, in his letter to the Philippians this morning, Paul calls us to rejoice. To rejoice regardless of the circumstances. Paul's admonishment to rejoice in the Lord always, written from a prison cell, probably similar to the one in which Alfred Delp wrote his Advent message, was grounded in the belief that no matter what happens, no matter what bad things happen in life, God is with us. And in the end, God will have the last word. In spite of all adversities, hardships, difficulties, nothing including dementia or death, is able to separate us from the love of God. No matter what happens to us, we still live and move and have our being in God. And no matter how awful things get on earth, there is a place prepared for each and every one of us in God's eternal realm. And that life itself is a journey toward this destination. And that is good news. That is good news worthy of our rejoicing. Always. No matter what. While I would have never, ever, ever wished for my diagnosis of dementia, in a strange way, I'm profoundly grateful. Dementia is opening up my world in ways beyond my imagination. It is helping me to see the preciousness and uncertainty of life. It is giving me more compassion and empathy and curiosity about others. And it is building in me a new home in which God intends to dwell all the way to the end. So most days, I rejoice, except when I don't. When life is feeling insecure and uncertain and unstable, when it all seems to be on the brink of falling apart, you and I need to trust and believe that God is rebuilding our living houses, your living house, and that instead of being made into a decent little cottage, God is constructing a palace, a cathedral, better than anything we could have ever dreamed or imagined is possible. And then, no matter what life circumstances present, to the best of your ability, rejoice. Rejoice knowing that God is near and coming even closer.